Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's that time.
It's that time again. The most wonderful time of the week.
Wonderful time of the week. Yes. The holiday spirit infuses the Six Color Secret podcast.
It's the most festive of podcasts. Generally, I think we are up there.
I agree. My kids are off to school. It's finals. It's the last day of finals. And then they are off for 3 weeks.
La-dee-da. Look at those people.
Well, next week's going to be nice because it's, you know, Christmas and my mom's coming and that's great. But once that all wraps up, I am stuck in a house with kids for 2.5 weeks.
Isn't this where you, like, if this were my youth, I feel like that's the point where I would be told to get a job.
Yeah, we were going to go on a trip, and then we actually have some friends who moved away who are coming back for a week to visit, and including my son's best friend. So it's like one of those things where we just kind of like decided we're not going to go anywhere, which is fine. I got other stuff to do and all that. The other thing that's happening this week, and this podcast is a part of it, is that I'm recording like 9,000 podcasts in about 4 days, and then I'm not going anywhere. But it does mean that my next 2 weeks are like super light workload for that, which is
good.
Which
that is nice,
but not right now. I've got like 4 podcasts today.
I escaped that in that I am still recording 2 shows next week, which
you're still recording them now? Oh my god. That's too many podcasts at once, Dan.
Hold on. I've got to answer this question from John Maltz.
Turn to the other microphone.
I'm just using the same audio for all 3 podcasts. I feel like it's, who would know?
I pity your editor who has to discern when you're talking on what podcast.
If I was ahead of the game, if I was feeling sharp enough this morning, that's when I would have just said something that's totally nonsensical for this podcast. Like, no, you just got to adjust the laser printer, you know, thickness settings.
Sure.
Or something. But
gotta.
You got to do that. I'm not quick on my feet, though. I end up having to record 2 podcasts over the sort of vacation week, only one of which I think I'll have to do while I'm on the road, which is clockwise, because it's just, when else am I going to be able to do it? Because I'm gone. I'm leaving tomorrow on my vacation, and then I'll be back, you know, at the end of the week or something. And at that point, it gets a little too late to sneak in a clockwise.
So, yes.
Got to get it done. And some other stuff. I'm trying to wrap up all my stuff today, because it does feel like, you know, this is the last work day before the Christmas holiday, so I kind of need, like, I got a bunch of stuff that needs to get done, and I'm, spoiler alert, I'm not going to get to all of it. I'm prioritizing. It's triage, right? You know, what are the things that absolutely have to get done?
How do you do I'm curious how you do your writing stuff, your novel stuff. Are you planning on continuing that, or are you going to, do you shelve that stuff too?
Well, funny that you ask that, because this week I wrapped on the first draft of the project I was working on. So that my goal was to get that first draft done before Christmas. And I pulled that out. I have one other thing that I'm thinking about right there. As I alluded on Twitter this week, I ended up taking a sharp left turn in the epilogue I was writing, which I had intended to be one thing. And it turned out to be, as I like got like a page into it, I was like, oh, what if it were this? And I ended up just writing that. And I was like, I don't know if this works, but I'm intrigued by it. And it seems like it might be an interesting development in the storyline here. I may go back and write that epilogue the way I had originally plotted it out, just to have both options and see, do I like one better? Is one feel more right for the book and the series? But yeah, other than that, my plan is to put a like pause on this for at least the rest of the year.
Huh.
Because, you know, as well as I do, you need to put something aside before you can come back to it and sort of go through, because I know there's work that needs to be done here. This was the first book I've written in like 3 months. And so I there are a lot of things as I go through being like, oh, I need to fix that later. Oh, I need to figure this out, like, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. I have to go back and like iron that all out, but I need to let it marinate for a little while so that I can get some distance. But at the same time, as I said, I've written this book in 3 months, it's under contract. And therefore, like, I have a due date for it, right? Like, I need to be able to turn it in. And I have, like, it was one of those things where when I got the contract for this and it's like, oh yeah, you know, turn it in July, 2019. I was like, that's fine.
That's far
like
away.
Super long time. It's so far away. Don't worry about it. And then I start working backwards. Like, well, if it needs to be in by July, it means it needs to be in to my agent probably like in the spring at the latest, because he will have some comments. I will need to turn some stuff around. And that means I need to go to like my beta readers probably in like late winter. and that's like, oh, so that's like February or something or March. And it's like, oh man, that means I need to be done with my draft by then, which means I need to be done with the first draft by the end of the year so I can re-edit it, then send it out to people, then make changes based on like their feedback if need be, then get it to my agent, then make changes on his feedback so I can get it to the publisher, and at which point you still have to make changes based on the editor's feedback. So yeah, it's finished. in that there's a complete story written, but I'm hoping to like kick back and not let my subconscious work on it over the next couple
weeks. This is the Stephen King always talks about this. This is the put it in a drawer period.
Yes.
Just to let it settle so that when you revisit it, when you re-engage with it, you're going to have a fresh perspective.
Right. I may look at, I've got another manuscript sitting on the shelf here that I want to finish editing that I've written. And I have like comments from my agent that need to be incorporated into that. That one is not sold, but it's one that I'm very excited about and would like to sell. So I need to sort of finish up the edits on that. So I may use that as like my palate cleanser in between to like do some edits on that, get myself disengaged with that other story so I can go back and look at it eventually. It's hard cutting. I've done the thing before where I finished a story and I'm like, great, I'm done. I'm going to take a break. And that break, it's like going to the gym. Again, I've used this analogy before for the gym, but like it's true too. Like you like go like, oh, I'll take a few days off, and then a few days turns into a week, and then a week turns into 2 weeks and three, and then you're like, oh, when was the last time I went to the gym? And so
sounds familiar thing. Like yeah, when was the last time I went running? Oh, before Apple released a million products in September or October. Oh boy.
So disengaging is important, but you don't want to get too disengaged, because then when you sit down to write the next thing or go back to the gym, it's like, oh god, this is so hard. Why did I stop? So I'm trying to like keep a cap on it, like, you know, a week or two for not you working on stuff, or like this week I won't be like writing, but I'll be, you know, that's like a reasonable amount of time to take for vacation. But it's hard. It's annoying because like I want to relax, but at the same time you don't want to get too relaxed, because then you get all out of shape and everything.
Yeah.
The brain gets flabby, Jason. That's what happens.
That's right. That's right. It's too much fat in the brain. You gotta gotta slim
serious
it back
problem.
Down. Yeah. It is. You know, it's a weird thing. Like I was thinking about this because they talked about this on ATP a little bit last week. But it's that truth of when you're kind of floating off on your own, like we are, that you know, it's not the same. I mean, this is true to a certain extent in the working world, depending on what your job is. Like, and I'll use an example in a moment, but for some jobs, when you take vacation time, when you've got the week off, you just take the week off, and somebody else has to do your job. That's just it. And maybe you probably help them. You say, here's what you need to do while I'm gone or whatever, but you're out. Then again, I'm reminded of the fact that our bosses at IDG would frequently, the last maybe 5-10 years, I mean, it might have been the entire time you were there, grant us a free week off paid at the end of the year. It was like you got your vacation time, but the last week of the year was generally just a vacation that was granted to everyone in the organization. It was like a little bonus, a little gift that you got.
So that was the penance for cutting all our salaries, as I recall.
I think it predated it, so I think that was maybe a lie. But anyway, but they did give that paid week off, which was really great, except the fact was that we did a website, and no one felt like we could just stop publishing our website for a week.
Right. Even though nothing is happening, you still need, because that's the weird thing. That was always the strange thing with it, is this like duality between, oh, it's vacation, everybody's spending time with their families or whatever, nobody will have time to go online and read, especially because nothing is happening, with the duality of everybody is off, therefore they can spend all day trawling the web.
The PC world people were adamant that some of their biggest traffic days were on holidays, because they figured that their readers were the type who were did not want to talk to their family and would just read PC World instead. And maybe I think they had traffic to back it up. But it was one of those things where I suppose, as editor in chief of, especially back in the Macworld days, I could have just said, like, meh, we're not gonna update any stories. I think there was some attempt to get some stuff pre-written where you'd basically time it onto the site and there was nobody around. But my point is that on that week, we had, I think it was basically like two people who, in exchange for comp time, essentially, per day, agreed to take a half day and basically like see if there was any news, see if there were any stories they needed to do, just to make it so that if something went on, we didn't not have anything on it for a week. And, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, so we're on vacation, but not quite.
Yeah. And as I recall those days, like, you know, having done those watches before, there was very little, like back in those days, you know, you might pull something off the wire and run it if it seemed like, okay, this is kind of interesting. I could probably count the number of times I had to write a story on like one hand easily. I don't think I often had to write any news during that shift because, again, nothing was happening.
Nothing.
But we would prep stuff to go live beforehand so that you had like a backlog. This is a good time to run all your good time to run your evergreen pieces. Haha, see what we did there?
Yeah, that's right. And you put a star on the top. I'm talking to Roman about my Macworld piece next week because they're shut down. And he said, you know, I'll be posting things.
Yeah, like, that's what he said to me too. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was planning on, I said, I'll try to write something in advance. That didn't happen. Reader, listener, that didn't happen. So I'll write it Boxing Day probably, and I'll put it in the system and he can just press the button and make it go live. Like, you know, it's not that big a deal. Yeah. I'm sure he's going to be checking in like once a day to make sure the website is continuing to operate. But it's just, there are gradations, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's not quite a hard, fast thing that you're either... you know, you're either like, I'm out of here, good luck, suckers, or you're having to do 100% of the work. But it is true that, like, this week, I was thinking about how, like, I was like, man, I got some stuff to write for Six Colors. Like, I it's all happening below the waterline, all this work that I'm doing this week that will end up showing up in, you know, on podcasts in the next couple of weeks. I sent out the Six Colors report card survey this week. Yeah, that's not going to show up for another 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
It's on my list of to-dos. On that list of to-dos. Yep.
Yeah. Well, you got till the end of the year to do it. I'm not going to compile it until January. I have memories of compiling the Six Colors report card when I was on vacation in Hawaii a couple of years ago. And I thought to myself, you know what? If the report card is later in January, it's fine.
It's funny too, because you run into the issue with the report card. I think kind of similarly this week, behind the scenes peek, we recorded the incomparable best of 2018 show. And the problem I always have with these is like, what happened this year? I have to think very hard or like go and review a bunch of stuff to be like, all right, 2018 was what exactly? The report card's always tricky with that too, because it's like, all right, what did they actually do this year? What was this year and what was last year? And what were the things we thought might happen this year but didn't happen this year? And it's always, I should probably save my own like report card submissions so that I can go back and look at them the next year. I don't know if I did that last year. That's always the fun part, and trying to like compile thoughts that seem like really insightful at the end of the year. Like, oh, I thought the Mac stuff was good. That's how you not get picked.
I had to write, I've been doing this so like For Macworld, I did my look back at my predictions for this year column, which is, they're not really predictions, they're like hopes. I don't do the prediction thing. I kind of like, I halfway do it where it's like, it's really a wish casting happening.
Yeah, sure.
So I did that, and then I've got to do that again now for 2019, the next couple of columns. And Tom's guide wanted me to write a piece about something about judging Apple's 2018, and I did a like success and failure and incomplete, and it's a kind of a combination of, again, it's like some of it is like, who are we to say if Apple's strategy with the iPhones this fall, that's an incomplete,
sure,
whether that works or not, because we just don't know, and we may not know for a while. But I did throw in some stuff like you know, air power.
Sure.
I listed actually the lack of iPad features in iOS 12 as a failure, because you look at the criticism of the iPad Pro, which is amazing hardware, that I listed as a success, and then I flipped it around to see what I did there. And I was like, but they completely abandoned the iPad in terms of iOS update, and that was an own goal. They really could have done that. They could have addressed a lot of the complaints with an iOS thing, and I don't know.
Yeah, no. I did my column. It's a look back, and it's more like a, here were the things I thought were the most significant things Apple did in 2018. I like doing those, because sometimes you can pick out things that seem like, you know, they weren't like products, right? It's not like the iPhone, the iPad, right? Like, for me, it's like going back and looking at decisions that were made, or, you know, other actions taken that I think will have long-term consequences. So for me this year, like, I think one of the biggest picks I dragged out was this deal they made with Dialogue Semiconductor, where they hired a bunch of their engineers who were working on Apple power stuff already, and like gave them $600 million or something. Now, that's a lot of money. That's like the second biggest amount of money they've shelled out for another company since Beats. And I think it's significant because power management is enormous, right? Like, barring a fundamental change in the way that batteries work, which people are working on, but we haven't seen anything that's close to mass production. Power management is going to be a big deal, because we have all these devices with batteries, and you want to get as much battery life out of them as possible, because that's when they're usable. So hiring 300 engineers from the power management firm you work with, so you can bring your power management stuff in-house,
right,
and make it work even better with your software and all your custom-built batteries and devices, is, I think, a big deal, because I think that's where, yeah, that's like sort of the next war is, like, how long does your phone last?
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, I think that there's interesting moves like that. I also pulled out the stopping reporting unit sales for iPhones,
yeah,
and iPads and Macs and stuff. I think that's a huge long-term thing for them, because it removes what is potentially a distraction. It's not going to stop people from speculating that shipments are down and trying to pull out all the tea leaves, but it does potentially stop them from having to address it.
Right. And
we'll see.
And push the revenue narrative some more.
Right.
I wrote about that a little bit, and also about the pricing thing, and whether Apple's strategy of pricing everything higher is going to come back to bite them or not.
Sure.
I think it could go a couple of different ways. I mean, it potentially is going to lengthen the buying cycle, which hurts their overall. Although there's some math to be done there about whether it ends up being a net benefit, could potentially drive people to the competition that's cheaper, although a lot of the competition is really enjoying the fact that Apple's pushing prices up so that they can rise their prices, you know, similarly. But I do wonder about it. You're right. The conversation is going to happen. I do also wonder, like, there are other ways other than Apple cutting prices where we will see this. And this, I said this to Mike on Upgrade a couple weeks ago, and he was a little skeptical about it. But I think there's, I don't think it's the whole story, but I think it's part of the story. Is one of the things Apple is doing by raising their prices the way that they have is, and then people are like, ooh, they're offering deals. The iPad is a deal now. The HomePod is a deal, and some people are like connecting the dots and saying, "Oh, Apple is hurting and they're offering deals." And it's like, I don't know. I think part of the idea of increasing your prices and padding your margins is that it gives you the luxury of offering deals and having them appear like deals, right? Like, it's the same way the iPhone XR seems like the cheap iPhone when in fact it's the cost of the old Plus phone. Well, is because in context, oh, this HomePod is $100 off. What a bargain. It's like, maybe.
Traditionally, they never did those. Like, they rarely did those. I mean, you know, we on the Rebound a couple last month, we made fun of the Apple Black Friday sales because they're usually terrible.
Here,
spend full price on your device iPhone. And we'll give you $50 and I've got a gift card or something. And it's like, I don't think that's a good deal. But you're right. Like, there is, it does give you a lot more flexibility. And it's also interesting in the grand scheme of things, especially when it comes to the iPhone, because if you hearken back, you know, to the iPhone circa 2007, 2008, the prices people were paying for them were not the actual prices of those things, right? We had carrier subsidies. We had then 2-year contracts, right? Like, so it's our association of what the value or what a phone should cost has changed a lot in the last decade, I think. And certainly the prices have gotten higher, but to a certain degree, it's also because, you know, we're paying a lot more of that cost up front than we used to.
Yeah. I wonder if there's math that Apple, you know, they used to price things probably based on a very specific kind of profit margin they wanted. And I wonder if right now they've padded their profit margin. But what that means is that then they can offer more deals that take them down to their desired profit margin.
Right.
And that's a different way of pricing products. I think that is part of what's going on here. Also, yeah, I mean, people were talking a lot about that sort of iPhone XR deal with the asterisk and all that on the Apple homepage.
Right,
but all it is a trade-in. They've been offering trade-ins for a long time, and they just offered a slightly more aggressive trade-in figure. But they didn't cut the price of the XR. They just were promoting. They're like, we know this is expensive, but if you give us your old phone, it could be cheaper.
It's a little bit. So here's a interesting comparison. In Massachusetts, you know, people may be familiar with the concept of blue laws, which are a lot of times these laws that, you know, protected or were spawned by sort of, especially for us, our Puritan like forebears who wanted to carefully regulate things like alcohol or sex or whatever, you know, all that unpuritanical stuff. So a lot of these have stuck around, and, you know, some of them are enforced more than others. But one of the weird ones in Massachusetts is you can't do happy hours because you can't discount alcohol. So what do? Well, you sell your alcohol at full price, but you discount all the food if you buy alcohol. And it's like end run, right? Like same idea. Everything is, you know, you're going to spend less overall, but it's just, where's the point of entry? So it's the same thing here. We're not going to make the phone cheaper, but we're going to increase the amount we give you for your old phone. Same end result. You're paying less, but we've just done it in a different way. And it is, it's a clever move on their part. And I think it, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out, because I think the XR, XS thing is a big departure for them. And you're totally right. It's incomplete. We're not going to know how this plays out probably until next year when we see what the lineup looks like next year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so I definitely put that on my kind of like incompletes. Like, yeah, 2019, that's the thing. I'm really looking forward to writing my 2019 pieces because I think this is going to be an enormous year. And I know it's like, oh, well, you could say that every year. You could, but like, okay, Apple is potentially recalibrating, has potentially recalibrated its entire iPhone machinery in terms of what models they offer. They had a very different product release. We don't know the numbers yet. Although they say it's going to be a record quarter, but still, like, in the long run, what happens after the launch quarter or the record holiday quarter? They're stopping the reporting of unit sales. What is that going to do in terms of how things get covered and in terms of their strategy? They're going to launch their TV service. What's that going to look like? And then come WWDC, they're basically going to merge the Mac and iOS app platform.
Yeah.
And my gut feeling is that is the that will be the biggest change to the Mac since the launch of OS X.
Yeah.
So, yeah, big year.
yeah, and, there's a lot.
And iOS 13 might actually bring features to the iPad, that would also be good. So yeah,
plus there's a Mac Pro. We want to know what the deal
right?
with that
Mac
is.
Pro ships in 2019. There might be we might see ARM Macs in 2019 too. It's possible.
That's one of my projections forward. Is I think this year, I don't know if it'll ship, but I think we'll get an indication if that platform transition is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think there's
I wouldn't bet against it shipping either.
I still think that there is a non-zero chance that Apple will announce that they're going to do ARM Macs at WWDC and provide a way for people to install the ARM Mac OS preview on iPad Pro hardware.
Oh, man. it's bananas. I agree. It's a non-zero chance. It's so this is a big year.
50%, 10%, 20%, because like they've got ARM PC hardware already, Apple ARM PC hardware with a USB port on it.
Yeah.
And people have them. So
And as we've said before,
that's
like
your ARM development kit, right?
The chance that iPad. You don't already have your Mac OS ready to run on ARM at this point is basically near zero, I would say.
Yeah,
like that exists. So what is stopping them is just Apple sort of giving the blessing and distributing it, really. Probably, but yeah, that's kind of man. It's gonna be a roller coaster of a year here, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, so that, yeah, big 2019, I think. Big stuff. I think Apple's been planning a lot of stuff that is all going to execute in 2019. So, exciting.
It's a good thing I don't have anything else going on next year.
Let's take a break.
Next year is a nice quiet year.
Oh, boy. Well, so in a week, it's the 28th. Are you gone?
No, I'm here. I should be back on the 28th. That's
all right. Well, maybe we'll pop in and do a quick
one more roundup of the year.
A quick chat, little holiday update and things like that. I hope everybody who listens to the Six Color Secret podcast is having a good holiday season and has a good Christmas. If you celebrate that next Tuesday, it's Tuesday. Oh God, I'm not ready. That's the downside of working really hard the week before Christmas is then you look up and you're like, oh, there's no days left till Christmas. Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, well. Right.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that's I think especially, you know, I have to like, you know, load up the car and travel. And it's like the, oh, God, I hope I got everything done I need to do before I left the house. Because once you're out the door, stuff gets harder.
Yeah. Yep.
Fingers crossed.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody again out there. Thanks to you, Dan. Have a good Christmas. And bye, Dan.
You too. Bye, Jason.